What Women Must Know with Sheryl Selman, Mondays at 2 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to What Women Must Know, a show about holistic perspectives and solutions for women's health matters. I'm your host, Dr. Sheryl Selman. I'm a naturopathic doctor. I am an author specializing in women's holistic health solutions. I also write for numerous magazines, and I've just come back from a glorious 7 weeks down under, having a fantastic time in Australia. So I am also recovering from the fact that I was in winter. I'm now in about 110 degrees hot summer, having come up above, and it's great being with you again. I did have a fantastic journey when I was in Australia, and I have so many exciting guests to be sharing with you over the next few months, people who I met while I was down in Australia. In fact, we're going to be having one whole month filled with very inspirational Australians who will be sharing their wisdom, insights on many aspects of health and well-being. So keep tuned in. By the way, if you want to know all the upcoming programs and articles and special reports that I have, please visit my website, whatwomenmustknow.com. Opt in there to my newsletter, and that will entitle you to get all these special reports and keep you up to date with a variety of things that are happening, including a new look on my website very soon. So it's a time filled with all sorts of fantastic changes, and I certainly welcome you to join me as we just expand the website, expand the information, expand the empowerment from getting truthful information. That's what this show is all about. It is helping to empower people with truthful information so they can make the most informed decisions possible. And today, we're going to be talking about the big picture here, the big view of what's going on. I know everyone has, I'm sure, been closely listening to their TVs and radios. There's lots happening on the political front, on the economic front, on the weather front. I don't know where you are, but where I live here in Tulsa, Oklahoma, we have made national news, record-breaking heat waves. We are going to get up to 110 this week, so there's just lots and lots happening. And to help us understand and put into context the kinds of profound changes we are witnessing without in the world, but also what many people are feeling within, is one of my favorite guests who has returned to be with us today. I'm talking about Robert Ayers, who is such a multi-talented and wise teacher. He is an international teacher of meditation, astrology. He also has had extensive background in the financial industry. And he is really in a great position to look into these cycles and help us understand more of what's going on, to clarify the things that we see in our world, and most importantly, to give us the guidance and wisdom so we can find our way and navigate through a time of tremendous change and transformation. So it's with great pleasure I welcome Robert to the show. So, Robert, are you there?
I am here, Sheryl.
Well, it's been a while since we've chatted, so I'm so glad you were able to join me today on my first show back after 7 weeks away from it all.
Well, thank you for having me on.
Oh, you're very welcome. Well, there is a lot happening, isn't there?
And a lot,
you know,
going on.
For people who have not heard you before, people who may be a little skeptical about the role of astrology and certainly how you are implementing it as a tool, maybe we can just say a few words so we can you can help describe how you see astrology, how you use it, and the fact that this is a tool that has been used for thousands of years by some of the most leading scientists, and that it is a credible resource and science when used properly and with the knowledge such as people like yourself have.
Yes, well, if we go back to ancient civilizations, we're going to find that it was a universal aspect of human culture in terms of the observation of the stars. We even talk about the Great Pyramids of Egypt or the ziggurats of Chaldea or the observatories in India or the Mayan pyramids. We're going to find some of them had multi-purposes, but they all in common had roles as observatories and for that of watching the movement of the stars. And one of the things that I think all of us are aware of at a very fundamental level, that time unfolds through cycles. Whether we speak of that as the monthly cycle of the moon on 28 days, whether we talk about it in terms of the cycle of the sun, 365 days, and looking at the seasons, but then we get into vast, or even the cycle of 24-hour day of light and darkness and activity and rest, we're going to find that life unfolds in a cyclic manner. And with this in mind, we see these cycles represented in terms of the movement of the stars and the planets until we get into vast cycles, that cycles that would be 2,160 years, cycles that would be 25,920 years. And the ancients very much were aware of these cycles and knew through the observation of the stars that they could really tell what was going on and why. Because in contrast to, say, astronomy, that of course observes the sky in great detail, the difference is that astrologers really discerned meaning within the movement of the stars. And this over thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And it is a science, meaning to really calculate all of this, there's a great deal of mathematics and geometry. And then that is the science part. The art part is the ability to interpret that which is the stars are telling us. And if we really look at all of the ancient cultures and civilizations, this was a fundamental part of their culture and advice and counsel to whoever happened to be the leader of the society in terms of what was going to be coming down, what was going to be happening, whether it, as you mentioned earlier, whether it's political situations or economic situations or geophysical, climatic, or weather situations. All of these are contained within astrology. And so that still comes up to today, and for various political and religious reasons, we're going to find back at the Age of Enlightenment, back in the 1700s of our culture, and we'll notice that this didn't happen in Asian cultures. It was an unbroken tradition, whether it's China or India or whatever, of the usage of astrology even up to the present day. But in our Western culture, we will find this, what is called the Age of Enlightenment, the time when it was breaking away from the church and it was establishing reason and the scientific approach, that it was felt necessary by those people at that time to eliminate all of the old teachings and knowledge. And in the process, the baby got thrown out with the bathwater, in that so much of the wisdom and understanding related to the stars was really considered superstition and thrown out. It never went away. People continued to practice it, but in terms of the official institutions of society, it was discouraged, frowned upon, basically attacked. And now, more recently in our lifetimes, there's been something of a renewal. But prior to that, there was a great deal of scientific prejudice against astrology that really was taken up by society as a whole, that really put it out of official favor. That is changing and has been changing in the last 50 years to where we're going to find, I mean, my background you were mentioning, in terms of investment banking and finance, there isn't really any major money manager or Wall Street person who is not going to be consulting the cyclic movement of economic cycles, financial cycles, in terms of investment of money. It would be considered irresponsible and foolish, even though they're not going to tell their clients about it. They're not going to advertise the fact because of the stigma associated with it. But I assure you that the usage of astrology is fundamental in terms of economic cycles, management of money, and we could go into money in any many other areas besides that.
You know, and I have to say that astrology has been one of the primary tools that I have personally used when I've been going through times of change and transition in my life, as an understanding of how best to work with the situations I find myself in. It's really not about predictiveness, because that's not really the role of astrology. It just helps you understand the cycles you're in. Well, at least this is my understanding, Robert. It helps the cycles you're in, and it helps you to make wise choices or to work with the challenges that life is presenting to you, so you can come through these times more with better inner resources, greater strength and wisdom as cycles change, and we're all going through cycles in our lives. So it's been invaluable. I can't imagine going through the changes that I've gone through in my life without the input and guidance that I've received from astrologers like yourself.
Well, yes, there's so many levels of the application of astrology. I mean, we can utilize it from the standpoint of what is known as mundane astrology, which has to do with the astrology of nations, the astrology of the world. But my particular focus, even though I'm deeply familiar with that area, I work with individuals in terms of their growth process and the changes and transformations they go through. So when we look at an individual's natal birth chart, which is their life plan, it's a map of their soul, it's a karmic report card, very objectively represented. And in terms of the cycles of the unfoldment of that plan or the human soul, there are going to be opportunities, there are going to be crises that are structured into everyone's life. And if we really understand what it is we're going through and why, what the particular karmic situation is, and what is it really can tell us what right action and what wrong action in a particular situation might be, and we consciously work with our life to unfold it, we consciously work with our soul to go through the changes and maximize the benefits and minimize the negative downside, we have a tool that can be invaluable in terms of what you're describing, the actual organic growth process of the individual to its highest level of attainment.
Okay, so having said all that, let's talk about what you see from your position as an astrologer looking at cycles. Let's look at some of the things that are going on right now in this moment in time. We're here beginning of August, and we've just kind of come through this debt crisis ceiling thing, or who knows where we are with it. But people, it's created a lot of people don't even understand it, don't understand the ramifications, whether we did or didn't, and it just has generated so much anxiety in the general population. So perhaps we can start there. What's your perception of the cycle we're in regarding the economic situation presently in our country, or perhaps even in the world? It's relevant. We'll see.
Yeah, it is really a global issue, even though, of course, our country is right in the midst of it and has its own personal issue with this. And it's actually something that we have spoken about for many years. It was something, 5-6 years ago, I was giving classes on, writing papers on, and saw this coming. And if we look at cycles, the planet Pluto, the planet of growth and evolution and transformation and metamorphosis, the symbol is the caterpillar turning into the butterfly, the phoenix rising from the ashes, the snake shedding its skin. It very much embodies a process that is happening around us all the time of death and rebirth. And to put it in perspective, every night we go to bed is a microcosmic death. Every morning we wake up is a microcosmic rebirth. We can do that seasonally. We can do it in all kinds of different ways. This is a natural rhythm of life. And for the first time in 250 years, in 2007, January of 2007, the planet Pluto entered into the sign of the zodiac Capricorn. And Capricorn is what rules business and politics and worldly power and authority, and it's what rules the institutions, that are the corporate, the governmental institutions of society, whose intent is to establish orderliness within society. Well, Pluto entering into this sign for the first time in 250 years, and it takes 17 years for Pluto to transit through this, so we're not really done with this process till 2024. It has to do with a death and rebirth of the power structure of the system, whether we look at it politically, whether we look at it economically, we could look at it in terms of the academia or the healthcare system. All of the power and authority structures of society, to the degree that they have become dysfunctional, are going through a decay and increasing dysfunction to where they're slowly dying to be reborn, where the services, the principles that they embody and the service that they are to provide to society, we're going to find them increasingly not able to do that as they were designed to do. It is the decaying and decadence and falling apart of that which worked before but no longer works. And so we're in this intense, because when we talk about Pluto, Pluto is the planet that rules earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, and nuclear incidents. And if we ponder that, we're going to see that there's been quite a bit of this of late. And it also is very much involved with extreme weather and these kinds of things. But it has to do with an intensity of change. And so here, for the first time in 250 years, and to give us a rough background, the last time this happened was during that time of the American and French revolutions, which were world-shaking in terms of the power structures and the cultural milieu of the day, if you will, where we were talking about monarchies. And here was the beginning of freedom. Here was the beginning of these cycles to where we look today, and most of us kind of take democracy, even though it's not universal, as something that we almost take for granted. Well, it was not 250 years ago. It didn't exist. And that was a new breakthrough, which has now become more standard. In a similar way, when we look at Pluto entering Capricorn back in January of 2007, and now we're in August of 2011, we're 4 years plus into this process. And it was during this time that the debt crisis unfolded. And Pluto rules debt. And if we want to understand the fundamental issue that's underlying this world crisis, it is as a debt crisis that, building up to this time in 2007, was an increasing over-leveraging or over-borrowing at every level of society, whether it was governmental, whether it was corporate, whether it was individual families or individuals. We were living on borrowed money. And then we find that as we get into 2008, the realization of the extremeness of the leverage, if we talk about the markets, to where out of greed, Wall Street and others basically to maximize profits borrowed money in order to make more money to such an extreme degree that it had never been achieved or experienced in that way before. And then the markets started to fall apart. The leverage or the borrowing got so extreme that the markets couldn't uphold the speculative nature of it. And we had the crash. And we're still living with the remnants of the crash, even though this bear market rallied. Understand we're still in a bear market. But over the last 2 years, the stock market has regained 50% of the value that it lost back in 2008 and 9. But now we're at the point where basically governments and businesses have kind of been metaphorically kicking the can down the road, not effectively dealing with the underlying issue of debt. We've been masking it over, trying to stimulate our way out of this crisis, but we're going to find that it isn't effective, that it's not going to solve the problem, that the underlying debt issue is still there. So when we look at the sovereign debt crisis in Europe, when we look at the raising of the debt limit in terms of Congress, we are dealing with the issues of debt. The debt has accumulated to a degree that we're not able to pay it off. And so here we see the strain and stress that it puts on society. We individually, most of us, have seen the value in our homes go down. We've seen our pensions shrink. We maybe are making less money, or we may not even have a job at all because of the unemployment. And so we see this economic issue is creating a crisis, and it's actually one of the basic reasons that in terms of the uprisings of the Arab Spring in the Middle East, it has to do with lack of economic opportunity for the younger generation, where they see no hope in terms of their futures, that they have no vested interest in society as it is. We're going to see this issue is a universal one that is all over the world. So we're in the midst of an economic crisis. If we speak of this astrologically, what has happened in addition to this transiting Pluto entering into Capricorn for the first time in 250 years is that two other planets, the planet Saturn, which actually rules Capricorn, and it rules the government, and it rules business, and it rules worldly power and authority, it rules the boss, it rules that, whether it's an institution or an individual, that holds the power and authority to really make things happen. And then the planet Uranus. The planet Uranus is the planet of the people. And it is the planet of freedom and liberation. And Saturn is the planet of control. And these two planets have come into opposition or 180 degrees from each other for the first time since the mid-60s. So the last time that the planets Saturn and Uranus were forming opposition or crisis aspects or tension aspects with each other was the mid-60s. And I think most of us will either have lived through or heard about the 60s in terms of the turmoil, the crisis, the polarization, because this is about a polarization. Saturn is the conservative, Uranus is the liberal. Saturn is the power structure, Uranus is the people. Saturn is control, Uranus is freedom. And these two planets opposed to each other are creating great tension. And then we see that the planet Pluto, the planet of change, intense change that we have just talked about, has moved into this position, and it has been this way for the past 3 years, this whole aspect, of squaring the planet Saturn, squaring the planet Uranus, and squares are negative, hard, tension, crisis aspects that form astrologically what is a T-cross, which is an incredibly stressful situation with a great deal of conflict. And if we look at the situation in Congress, for example, in terms of extending the debt limits, this is not really an issue about the debt limits and raising the debt ceiling. It's an ideological, political argument or dialogue, if they were really speaking to each other, which they're really not, they're speaking at each other, in terms of a fundamental issue that was at the very basis of our country's formation. If we go back that 250 years, and for those of us who remember our U.S. history and had to read the Federalist Papers, we're going to find that prior to the creation of our Constitution and in the process of creating our Constitution, there was a very, very significant debate that was going on. It was kind of Jeffersonian and Hamiltonian that had to do with an elite structure and a people structure. And there was a debate that was intense going on during the formation of our Constitution of what is the proper role of the federal government in terms of the United States. And we're going to see that there were this group that basically felt that there should be minimal activity on the part of the federal government in terms of its role, and that there were those that were more feeling that it should, the federal government should play a more active role in terms of the well-being of the people. This issue has now come front and center, and this budget crisis is more about this ideological rift or philosophical controversy of the role of the federal government in affairs as this debt limit issue or ceiling has just become a flashpoint in this philosophical debate. Now, unfortunately, from my perspective, you know, most of us are familiar that in the past our politicians have been able to come together even at the last moment in order to create a resolution or a compromise to address any particular crisis in terms of the well-being of the country and the people, taking that as their primary responsibility. And we would hope that, again, reason will prevail in terms of looking at the downside of this situation in terms of the U.S. government default on its financial obligations, the effect that that can have in terms of the downgrading of our credit rating, which is going to result in higher interest rates that we have to pay on borrowed money, and across the board in terms of interest rates in general, which will dampen or destroy this very weak recovery, and also the process of really dealing with the associated ramifications of a default in terms of the dollar as the reserve currency of the world markets, and all the reserve dollars that various countries hold in their reserves, and the downgrading or devaluing of that. And even from our banking system standpoint, the banks are having to look at the U.S. government securities that they hold as the basis of them doing business, or the collateral that or capital that they must keep on hand in order to loan money. And if their portfolios are downgraded, that means that they're worth less, and therefore they can loan less money or no money at all, meaning we have a further contraction in terms of the money supply and the banking system be able to loan money, which is the stimulus of our economic activity. And not just domestically, because U.S. government securities are held globally in countries all over the world, and they form the most fundamental basis of the store of value that is the basis of the world economy. And to the degree that Congress does not come together into an agreement in terms of this debt ceiling, and we do default, then the ramifications, we are in new territory. This has never happened before. The implications and ramifications of such a scenario are really unknown. When we look at this, it can be the trigger that we then go into another recession or depression, because it will be nothing but negative in terms of its effect on the markets and the economy. Unfortunately, astrologically, if we look at the planetary configurations for August 2nd, and today is August 1st, we're going to see a number of factors that would say that reason may not prevail in Congress, that there is a basis from an astrological standpoint for them not to reach agreement, and for a negative scenario to unfold, which I think most of us would be fairly confident or hope that under these circumstances they would be able to find common ground and raise the debt ceiling, and things would go on. But then when we look at the stars, it gives us a basis for concern. Tomorrow we are going to find that the planet Mercury goes retrograde. And Mercury is the planet of mind and communication. And when it goes retrograde, it increases the opportunity for misunderstanding and miscommunication. It also results frequently, when Mercury goes retrograde, that any contracts or agreements that are entered into during Mercury retrograde tend to fall.
Okay, well, I think we just lost Robert Ayers, so we're going to be getting him back, and I think it's a good time for us to take a short break. And I want to just let you know you're listening to What Women Must Know. This is Dr. Cheryl Silman. We have been listening to Robert Ayers, who is a world-respected astrologer, also teacher of meditation, and has had a long history in the world of finance. And we'll be right back. Don't go away. This is really interesting information. Hi, everyone. Welcome back. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. We are tuned in to What Women Must Know. And we were talking to Robert Ayers before the Pluto retrograde turned us off the air, and Robert disappeared, but he's back. So we are talking to Robert Ayers, who is one of the most respected astrologers in the United States, And he's giving us some insight into all that's going on into our economic situation. We're going to be talking more things like what are some of the choices we should be making? How best can we look after ourselves, our families, our finances, our health in the years ahead as we go through times of death and rebirth? So, Robert, are you there?
So, just kind of finishing those thoughts, Cheryl.
Okay.
Picking it up, and then we can move on. But Mercury goes retrograde tomorrow, and it is the planet of communication. And agreements, first of all, misunderstandings are more prevalent during that time, more difficult to reach agreement. Second, if agreements are reached, contracts and agreements signed, they tend to fall apart and not last. And we're going to find that Mercury will be retrograde for roughly about the next 3 weeks. In addition to that, the planet Mars is coming around for the first time in 3 years, the planet of action, but it's also the planet of conflict and wars and these kinds of things. Has come around to oppose this transiting Pluto, square this transiting Saturn, square this transiting Uranus, forming what's called a Grand Cross, the most difficult, challenging type of karmic configuration or planetary configuration that there is, which adds an additional level of conflict to this situation that we really haven't seen since this crisis began, because it was about 3 years ago that Mars did this again. And then there's a last aspect, which is what we've already talked about, but to give this is an important part of the understanding of what is going on. The planet Uranus and Pluto are beginning on August 12th to form exact square aspects for the first time in 250 years in this sign. And exact squares. Uranus is the unexpected. It's instability, it's social unrest, it's revolution, it's rebellion. It's when chaos can unfold. And the planet Pluto, which is this dynamic, incredibly intense planet of change, that really is when these two square, and they're going to come into this negative square aspect seven times in the next 4 years, from August 12th of 2011 through December 31st of 2015. And so we can look at this from an astrological perspective as what has led up to now, today, has been a prelude for that which is to unfold over the next 4 years, which will seem almost as if the world is falling apart. This is where chaos begins to reign, or where we continue to be amazed at unexpected incidents that shake us to the foundation of our system. And we've been seeing these things, whether it's the Japanese quake and the quake in Japan and New Zealand, the extreme weather, which you mentioned before, all of this because the weather is a reflection of the collective soul of humanity, and it relates to the subtle bodies of the earth to the degree that mankind's collective consciousness is stressed. We're going to find that expressed as extreme weather. That's a whole other topic. But again, it's related to the stars. So when we look at this, we see that the crisis has the opportunity to increasingly intensify and spread into areas that we may have not seen before. So when we look at correct action, it is where we want to establish ourselves financially, especially in a safe, secure way, to the best of our ability, and also just in terms of life in general, to be a little more self-sufficient, a little more prepared, that a lot of those institutions and services that we may have taken for granted may not be there for our support. A lot of this is, the whole process is one of cleansing and purification and healing, and it is about each one of us individually taking responsibility for our lives and not really expecting or depending on various institutions to be taking care of us. So that would be the short answer. I'm not sure at this point what focus of direction you'd like me to
Okay, so just to recap, so, I mean, nothing has actually been signed yet, right? There seems like there's
to my knowledge, correct, yes,
yeah.
Nothing has been signed.
And what you're saying, that we'll wait and see, but from an astrological, it hasn't been signed. So from an astrological place, we've all assumed they would all get together and finally work out all their differences, whether it's, you know, political theater or whatever. But what you're saying from that perspective, there is a possibility it won't come together, and then we will have to deal with the consequences.
That's correct. And, you know, I hope I'm wrong, but I've looked at it very, very closely from an astrological perspective. And unfortunately, there are the elements in the stars that would say we may not get a resolution on this issue.
And the other important thing from your, you know, view of the situation in general, what's going on in our history of humanity, you might say, is that the United States, and probably, I mean, this is also true throughout the world, but we'll look at the United States for people who are, you know, listening in, that, I mean, there are changes happening. There are changes economically. We don't know what they are. We don't know what they will look like, but we do need to be aware and understand it's not business as usual, and then take appropriate action. So, am I correct with that?
Yes. In fact, it is a time of great change, and kind of, again, in broad strokes, what is going on so people have an understanding is when we look at the corporate world or the business world in our country, and it would be the same in other countries, but we see, you know, it would be like the Fortune 500 or the blue chips. Here are these companies that have formed the basis and bedrock of the American economy and the world economy for many, many years. They would be what we would consider Saturn or the established order or the establishment or the power structure. Uranus is power to the people, and it is opposing that. And Uranus is going to manifest as everything alternative, everything that's grassroots, everything that's bubbling up from individuals and people to challenge the existing order. So we would be looking very much at alternative businesses, services. I don't care what it's in, whether it's healthcare or whether it's academia or whether it's in finance or whatever it may be. What this is a percolating up of a whole new intelligence of creativity that really is challenging the existing order, because the existing order is not really serving us to the degree that it used to in the past. So there's all kinds of, if we look correctly and we understand what's going on, there's vast opportunity in terms of being creative with this situation to really create the new world or the new culture and society that is actually beginning to form.
So it's time for us to, you know, wake up to who we really are. I mean, that's how I see it. We've kind of lost a bit of our direction, which leads me to the. Well, I have a couple of questions while the time. Well, we still have the time. Number one, let's look at some of the practical things that you're suggesting, based on your knowledge, people should be doing at this point. I mean, I'm a big fan of taking my money and investing it in silver bullion. That's the primary source of where I'm putting my money and my savings. Because I know that comes up for people. What do they invest in? Are the stocks? Whatever. So do you have any, I know you're not here to give recommendations of investing and stuff, but do you have any overarching suggestions that people can then look into or follow?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things would be to get out of the stock market, because it's going to crash. And when we get into the fall, I anticipate that phase two of the financial meltdown is going to start unfolding in 2012. From a financial and market standpoint, is going to be very, very bad and difficult. And so the area of greatest risk immediately is the stock market. So I would be recommending that by the end of August, and it's to be safe, that people sell their positions and get out of the stock market. Then what do they do with their money?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we can put it in bonds. We can interest rates will go up, though, so that the risk of losing principal in terms of entering into bond funds, individual bonds that we hold to maturity, we do not have any market risk. That would be fine as long as they're AAA rated corporates. I wouldn't recommend any government of any kind, whether it's federal, state, or local munis, the financial stress on governmental bonds at every level is severe. And so that we would recommend against, and to sell out to the degree that we are in municipal bonds or these kinds of things. What we would be recommending is AAA corporates, but that is only if we hold them individually, not if we hold them in a bond fund, because we can, if they're in a fund, then as interest rates go up, which they will, then our bond value or prices go down, and we can lose as much money in the bond market as we can in the stock market. And I anticipate over the next several years a significant increase in interest rates that would result in that. If we have, in which I would agree with you, Cheryl, that if we have a serious question in terms of the stability of the financial system in the United States and globally, and it's understanding that the U.S. dollar is the basis of the world economy, so we therefore have, as a country, a significant amount of responsibility in terms of dealing sanely and conservatively and appropriately with our financial situation, because the ramifications are global. But when we see what is going on, it creates great question in most people's minds about how rational and how sound our financial and economic policies are, which then reflects poorly on the dollar and the financial system, which is based on the dollar. If we have serious questions about the stability of the financial system and the dollar, then we do recommend investing in precious metals. We recommend investing in silver and gold. And if we look, we're going to see that these areas are at historic highs. They can drop down to the degree that there is, you know, the financial and monetary systems comes back to sanity and we do snap out of this economic malaise. But quite frankly, in the immediate future, or the next 4 or 5 years, I personally feel that things are going to get worse, not better, which would then strongly recommend that to the degree that we can, we take the money that we get from selling our stocks and putting at least 25% of that into gold and silver. And that can be ETFs, exchange-traded funds. It can be taking physical possession of the metal itself in coins or bars, or it can be investing in gold and silver mining stocks or precious metal mining stocks. There's many different ways in terms of investing in precious metals, but you know, I would tend to support your personal what you have been doing in terms of your personal investing. But overall, that would be the area, and I look at precious metals, as investing in precious metals, as more an insurance policy. It is insurance. In terms of a worst-case scenario, if everything falls apart, you have an investment that will basically keep your asset values intact and even potentially grow your overall asset values because of the upward price of precious metals.
That was 25%. What about the 75%?
Well, it would be, what I recommend is that people put 75%, and this is the distinction, in a personally structured, not a fund, a personally structured AAA-rated corporate bond portfolio. This is where we get out of stocks and go into bonds, but most brokers are lazy and they are going to put your money in a bond fund, which, as I mentioned earlier, puts you at risk of losing money as interest rates go up.
So how do you do that? Where do you go?
You have a bond specialist. There is a bond specialist in the firm, the brokerage firms, the investment firms, that specializes in the aftermarket, where there's thousands and thousands and thousands of corporate bonds that are bought and sold every day, to where we then put our money, we have our bond specialist basically create our own personal bond portfolio, meaning, okay, we've got AT&T, IBM, Microsoft, whatever, Exxon, and we own those personally, and we stagger maturities, what in the industry is called laddering, where we would have a bond maturing in 2012, a bond maturing in 2013, a bond maturing in 2014, et cetera. And what that does is when we hold a bond to maturity, there is no market risk, meaning you put $10,000 into it, it matures, you get $10,000 back. During the holding period, you're getting your yield, whether it's twice a year or four times a year or whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. And also what that does is with these staggered maturities, it gives you liquidity. Because every year you're getting some of your principal back, and then you're able to evaluate the economic environment at the time you get your principal back as to what then might be the best investment for you at that time. So it builds in liquidity, it builds in yields, and it also, if we are in an interest rate rising scenario, which I think we will be for quite some time, then as each bond matures, we're able to go out into the marketplace and buy a new bond at the higher yield. So we're increasing the return on our bond portfolio systematically every year as we do this.
Okay, so just to recap from your understanding of the situation, 75% get out of the market because you, or watch it carefully because it may actually start to.
It could go very quickly. That's the problem is,
oh, really?
That in a few days before people can get out, they might have lost so much money. And so we tend to err on the side of caution or try to get out before those kinds of things happen.
Okay, so from an astrological perspective, you're seeing this happening the end of August. That's not very
far. Right. Well, I would say get out of stocks by the end of August. We expect the fall, probably October, to where things really start getting bad.
And then
so
look, and look into a personal structured AAA corporate bond
right.
investments and also some of that into some sort of precious metals.
Correct.
I've been studying a lot. Okay, in a little bit of time we have less than 10 minutes. Can you give your perception on this 2012 thing? You know, people are talking about 2012 and what it all means. What is it?
Yes. It's two things. One, I think most people in a popular level are aware of it because of December 21st, 2012 and the end of the Mayan calendar, which is the immediate end of what is represented in the Mayan calendar as a 5,000-year cycle. If we compare that to the Vedic tradition of ancient India, we're going to find that this parallels what is known as Kali Yuga. We're going to find that at this time of 2012, it is also the end of Kali Yuga, or the Iron or Dark Age that began 5,000 years ago, which is kind of celebrated or symbolically represented for those of you who are familiar with it, with the Bhagavad Gita of Krishna and Arjuna's dialogue that is part of the Mahabharata of ancient India, this great epic poem that has to do with really expounding the whole nature of reality. The Bhagavad Gita means the song celestial. And it is this cosmic wisdom that Krishna reveals to Arjuna and on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, which is really just incredibly beautiful and profound. That event began Kali Yuga, or the Dark Age, of which when we then talk about this year 2012, this is the ending of Kali Yuga, or the Dark Age, and the Mayan calendar has it also. And so we find that we're in 2012, we have the end of a 5,000-year cycle, and if we were to compare this to evolution of humanity, it was a dark age. It was an age of ignorance. It was an age, relatively speaking, where our conscious awareness to the spiritual worlds was cut off. And what we find following the dark age, or Kali Yuga, or this Mayan calendar, is a new age of light, or what would be known as Sat Yuga, which is an age of light. So we find, again, the cyclic unfoldment of time. There's Sat Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dvapara Yuga, Kali Yuga, and then we find it repeats again. So when we talk about 2012, it's a transition from the end of a dark age to transition into an age of light. And if we look at the Mayan calendar and the Mayan elders who really understand their calendar, they would be saying the same thing. They would say we're in a time of significant transition that has to do with a lot of change and transformation. The world's going to be here. The world's not going to end. Life is going to go on. But a lot of the structures of society and a lot of the principles and values that have formed our old society are going to change. And they're going to change in a more enlightened way. That this is a major step in evolution. If we were going to speak of it astronomically or astrologically, we're going to find that on December 21st, 2012, that the sun of our solar system aligns with the central sun of our galaxy for the first time in 25,920 years, or what is known as Plato's Great Year. And it is the ending of a larger cycle of 25,920 years. And we have to remember that our solar system is part of a galaxy. And just as our planets orbit around our sun, our solar system and all the other solar systems orbit around a central sun of this galaxy. And we are going to find when we look at December 21st, 2012, that our sun aligns with the central sun of our galaxy for the first time in 25,920 years. And we could say, using computer terminology, that our system is rebooted. And our system is rebooted back to the original plan, divine plan, or intention that was set in the system originally. And that we can say a system runs down over time and becomes more corrupt, decadent, and dysfunctional. So we're at that point where the corruption and decadence and dysfunction is reaching a climax during this time that we're talking about between now and 2012, and that there's going to be a shift where things get better. Now, understand we're talking about cycles of vast periods of time, thousands of years. So is this going to be, 2013 going to be an age of light? No, it takes hundreds of years of transition. And it's just as it's taken hundreds of years to for the current situation to unfold.
But something big and monumental is happening, even though the seeds are just being planted, so to speak.
I mean, this is major evolutionary steps for humanity.
So a lot of change, but on not always comfortable. But on the other hand, it's opening up possibilities for new things, new opportunities, new awarenesses within us that gives us more of the resources, inner strengths, inner resources, inner knowledge to create something new.
Yes, and it's important for people to understand, as things look increasingly dark, to know and understand that something good is happening, that it's necessary. It's like an illness. It's necessary for us to go through that illness in order to heal ourselves. It's a process of cleansing and purification for us to come out the other side, reinvigorated, re-enlivened with greater possibilities. And that's really kind of the process that we as a society, as a people, as a world are going through at the present time. Something good is happening. Crisis is opportunity.
Robert, I want to be sure that you give your website address if people want to contact you, if they want to learn more about your work or have a consultation. But before we do that, I just want to say one thing really quickly. This is really the time when everyone who's listening would serve themselves to take up some sort of meditation. Do you agree with that? Just find some relaxation technique, meditation, just something where you can go inside and access a place of strength and healing and wisdom inside oneself.
Absolutely. I've been a teacher of meditation for 45 years, and what we're talking about, Cheryl, is that there's deep spiritual transformations going on within every one of us and within the world as a whole. And in order to connect correctly so that we are aligned with this transformation, meditation and inner directed attention it will make all the difference in the world for an individual in terms of how smoothly or how difficult this process of transition will be able to be gone through. What is wanting to happen in a bigger sense is the conscious recognition and conscious connection of ourselves with spirit. There is no better way to do that than meditation and spiritual practice.
Great. And Robert, just give your website so people can find a way to contact you.
Yes, my website is astrologicalalchemy.com, and just as it's spelled, astrologicalalchemy.com. And my phone number, if people want to give me a call, it's area code 530-550-1118.
Okay, just give that one more time.
530-550-1118.
And I have to say that I do refer many of my patients and friends to Robert to help them get a perspective of what's going on in their lives. So I thank you for all the great wisdom you've imparted. It's really been so helpful to all the people who have gone to you to, it's like have a bigger view of what's going on.
Thank you, Cheryl.
Thanks, Robert. As always, it was an enlightening conversation. Wishing you well.
Thank you.
Okay, and this is What Women Must Know. You've been listening to Robert Ayres, who is a world-renowned astrologer, giving us some insights into the amazing changes and transformations that are going on, will continue to go on in our world and within ourselves. And until next time, remember to always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.